Labas and good afternoon. This is Kęstutis Reividas, and you're listening to Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial and live streaming audio at ktym.com.
Lietuviai mes mylime mišką, pilką akmenį paukštį naktinį, sūrių gintarų lašą ištryškusi iš tos vietos.
Mes lietuviai mes mylime mišką, those were the lyrics of the opening little cut there you heard. That's We Are Lithuanians, We Love the Forest. So take that for what it's worth. And, of course, that song refers to the Forest Brothers, the Partizani, the Partisans, the Freedom Fighters, who retreated into the forests of Lithuania to defend the country of the Soviet Bolshevik occupation. And, of course, all of this is on the minds of Lithuanians now, especially the older generation, who still remembers some of it and remembers the stories from their parents or grandparents. Even though all that was muted a lot during the Soviet period. But, you know, that's another story. Right now, we're going to get to a few of the community events, and then we're going to talk about current events in Lithuania and the Baltics. The Daughters of Lithuania are having a fundraising concert. Daughters of Lithuania fundraising concert. Wonderful organization. And that's going to be June 1st at 12:30. June 1st at 12:30 at St. Casimir's Parish Hall. St. Casimir's is at the corner of Griffith Park Boulevard and St. George Streets. The Daughters of Lithuania help families and individuals in need in Lithuania primarily and even here in the United States. And it's like I say, it's a great organization. They do wonderful work. They keep it simple and they get right to the point instead of having a big bureaucracy. They go out there to orphanages and to those in need in Lithuania and help them directly. Anyway, if you want to help out the Daughters of Lithuania, and it's a great cause, come to the fundraiser on June 1st at 12:30, and it'll be well worth your while because Rudolfas Budginas, a world-class pianist, will be performing. And he does this show about the power of music, and it's just like the power of music 2.0. He talks, he jokes, and he explains, and he plays, and he puts on a great show. It's highly entertaining, and it's well worth your while. $50 will get you a lunch and a great show, 12:30 Sunday, June 1st at St. Casimir's Parish Hall. Okay, also coming up is Jaunimo Šventė, or the Youth Festival, which is June 8th, a week later. June 8th at St. Casimir's Parish Hall. You can call Dangola Varniene, who is the director of the youth ensemble, at 818-249-7574. Get your pens and pencils ready. I'll repeat it in a minute. But this is, again, a great event because Spindulis performs, and that's the youth ensemble that's been performing for something like 65 years, I believe. And Dangola Varniene is now the director, taking over from her mom many years ago. Anyway, her number again is 818-249-7574. That's 818-249-7574. And that's at June 8th at St. Casimir's Parish Hall. And you will see them dancing and singing and under the directorship of Dangola Varniene, the youth ensemble known as Spindulis. And finally, of course, we always give you the weather in Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania. And tomorrow it'll be like 71, and throughout the week it'll be in the mid-70s. It's kind of uneventful weather, and it's kind of normal weather, as opposed to what we're having out here, which is like this incredible heat wave that's just finally breaking here in Los Angeles. But anyway, in Vilnius, 71 today, tomorrow, and then mid-70s again through the 10-day forecast, with about a 50% chance of rain in the middle of the week. Lows in the high 50s at night. Okay, that little excerpt of music you heard was about a famous battle where the freedom fighters in Lithuania in the 1940s fought against the Bolsheviks, the Soviets who had invaded Lithuania. And they ultimately lost that battle, by the way. They were all killed, but they took down something like a ratio of 4-1 of the enemy. Four Soviet Bolsheviks died for every Lithuanian that gave up his life for freedom, and that was a little excerpt of the song, Battle of Pinavia. Anyway, we're going to go on and talk about a few things going on here. I want to share with you an editorial, a write-up by Edward Lucas. Edward Lucas has just published a book. Actually, he published it a few years ago, and now it's been updated, The New Cold War. And he's updated it to reflect what's happening in the Ukraine. And he's written an article that's published on the Lithuanian Tribune. And I want to share it with you. The message could hardly have been clearer. Russia marked victory in Moscow with a parade overseen by President Putin. He also visited Crimea and praised its return to the motherland. Meanwhile, bandits wielding Kalashnikovs guard roadblocks in eastern Ukraine, and helicopters are shot out of the sky. Now, if you've been listening to the program or been paying any attention to the news, it was amazing. They have this big parade in Moscow, and Putin presides over it and gets on an airplane, flies over to the Ukraine, or what was the Ukraine, and goes to Crimea and says, "Welcome back to the motherland, everybody." Okay? Anyway, Edward Lucas writes, "Ukraine, a European country, is facing the choice forced on it by Russia between dismemberment and civil war. What more will it take to wake up the world to the threat posed by Russia under its sinister strongman, Vladimir Putin? The Russian leader has torn up the rules on which European security has been based for decades. He and his cronies loot tens of billions of dollars from Russia each year and launder it in the city of London, corrupting the public life there." Now, I have to tell you that Edward Lucas is a Brit, okay, and lives in London. "They bribe and bully their way. At home, they jail and persecute their opponents, those who seriously cross their path end up dead. One of them was Anna Politkovskaya, the gutsy campaigning journalist who was shot dead in 2006. Another was the defector Alexander Litvinenko, assassinated by Russian agents in the streets of London with radioactive poison back in 2007. It was these killings that prompted Edward Lucas to write the book The New Cold War, first published in 2008. It warned the West that Mr. Putin's regime was a new and terrifying threat. The regime was funded by organized crime and big business, and at its heart was the evil of the old Soviet KGB. It was bent on repression back at home and aggression abroad. And it is fueled by greed, paranoia, and deep resentment of the West." The event prompted him to write the book in 2007, right after the cyber attack on Estonia. It was also a clear sign that Russia was meddling and mischief-making in the Baltics, especially in Lithuania. At least to Edward Lucas, the author of the book, the supposed democracy and capitalism of the new Russia, which was praised by the West, was a sham, distorted and discredited versions of the real thing. Indeed, ever since Russia's rebirth amid the Soviet collapse of 1991, Britain and other Western countries have adopted a policy of closed eyes and crossed fingers. The truth is that Russia's failure to disband the KGB and the Kremlin's refusal to acknowledge the crimes of the Soviet past has fatally tainted Russia. The author was based in Moscow when Mr. Putin came to power in 1999 amid an outbreak of apartment block bombings, you'll remember that, which were unconvincingly blamed on Chechen terrorists. Only a few brave voices argued that they were in fact a cynical stunt by Kremlin provocateurs. The aim was to use terrorism to panic Russians so they would accept an ex-KGB regime which stole their freedoms while supposedly offering security and safety. His book was a bestseller, translated into 20 languages, but many dismissed it as scaremongering. Distinguished diplomats and eminent Russia experts lined up to poo-poo the book. Russia, though not perfect, was now capitalist and democratic, they said. It was part of the West. Mr. Putin's regime was no worse than many others. The business opportunities for foreigners were good, if not very rewarding. But the critics seemed naive. Others were cynical. Britain was, and still is, awash in Russian money. Any criticism of modern Russia was countered by an influential pro-Kremlin lobby of bankers, lawyers, accountants, and businessmen whose comfortable lifestyle depends on lavish fees and contracts earned from supporting the mess of Kremlin crony capitalism. They ignored the growth of the new ideology in Russia. It was an old idea. The Tsarist Trinity of autocracy, nationalism, and orthodoxy. Mr. Putin and his ex-KGB cronies are no exception. They have a sinister, superstitious belief in their own destiny. They want to restore Russia's greatness and believe that God is on their side. Bizarrely, they combine those beliefs with Soviet nostalgia, not for Lenin's failed communist experiment, but for the greatness of the Soviet Empire. In truth, that empire was built on the bones of tens of millions of innocent victims. We all know about that, but it includes, and we forget that sometimes as Lithuanians and Balts, it includes countless Russians. But the Putin regime has no time for these quibbles. In truth, the real Russophobes are those who collude with a regime that loots its own country, a country whose language the author is proud to speak, whose literature he adores, and whose people he admires. Far from scaremongering, the book actually understated the danger. In the new Cold War, it was about banks, not tanks. It was about subterfuge, bluff, propaganda, and the use of cash for political ends. But what the author did not foresee was the terrifying way and truth that Russia is modernizing its armed forces. In 2008, it barely managed to invade its neighbor Georgia in a conflict that cynically provoked, and then with characteristic Kremlin chutzpah, blamed it on the defeated victim. The result was a dismemberment of a small pro-Western country and the humiliation of its backers, chiefly us, the USA. Much of Russia's military is indeed in a woeful state, but enormous increases in the defense budget have improved equipment, training, and readiness. In 2009, Russia staged huge military maneuvers on NATO's borders, next to Poland and the Baltic states. Western military officials were aghast when intelligence reports came in of the scenario for that exercise. Russia was rehearsing the invasion and occupation of Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia, and it also carried out a dummy nuclear attack on Warsaw. In 2013, it repeated those drills. By this time, Western military observers were deeply alarmed by the huge improvements in the Russian ability to move large quantities of men and equipment long distances in a short space of time. Now, while Russia has been investing massive sums in its military, NATO has been cutting. Only a handful of countries, Poland, Estonia, and Britain, spend 2% of their national income that the alliance mandates. A study in Sweden, commissioned after a dummy Russian air raid last year, says the country could not last a week against a Russian attack. Russia has also fiercely stoked anti-American sentiment, which is rampant in Europe. The spurious and sensationalized revelations of the fugitive American intelligence contractor, Edward Snowden, who has now found amazingly refuge in Moscow, have persuaded many Europeans, preposterously, that the United States is the main threat to world peace. The USA is understandably furious about this. It is already borrowing money to pay for Europe's defense. And if Russia tests NATO's resolve, America will be risking World War III in defense of stingy and ungrateful Western Europeans. Scared by fiascos in Afghanistan and Iraq, Americans are already war-weary. For the first time since the 1930s, a majority think the USA should mind its own business in world affairs. For the first time since Normandy landings of 1944, there are no American tanks in Europe. The remaining ones left in 2013. NATO's first big exercise in Eastern Europe last fall, Steadfast Jazz, as it was named, was the alliance's first attempt to respond to Russia's threatening military drills. It rehearsed how NATO would defend its most vulnerable members, the Baltic states. Yet America sent only a token force, and Germany, always oversensitive to Russia's feelings, tried to block Americans from participating at all. The decline of the Atlantic Alliance is grim for Britain, too. That army there is at its smallest since the Napoleonic Wars. The Navy and Air Force are hollowed out by shortages and defense cuts. Perhaps most dangerous of all, the British intelligence services are denuded, too. The author also admits that he had underestimated how effectively Russia would fight on another front, propaganda. The Kremlin throws hundreds of millions of dollars into its propaganda machine. Its slick, jazzy Russian TV channel pumps out pro-Kremlin broadcasts all over the world. They highlight Western decadence, double standards, and weakness. Meanwhile, our politicians and bureaucrats have ruined the once mighty BBC World Service. During the Cold War years, it was the pride of the BBC. When the author worked there, he was proud to walk the gleaming marble halls, once trodden by great freedom fighters such as George Orwell. World Service programs in English and in other languages were a valuable counterblast to the Soviet propaganda machine. They gave hope to people living in fear and misery. Now the World Service is a humiliated, cash-strapped shell. Its programs beset with political correctness and timidity, which have ruined the rest of the BBC. And the huge audiences in Russia and Eastern Europe have dwindled. Not only do we fail to fight back, he writes, we barely realize that the Kremlin is once again waging an information war against the U.S., Britain, and the West. Now, this editorial article goes on and on and on, so I'm not going to belabor it. But you get the point. But one thing is that he writes is that Mr. Putin is a formidable enemy. He has shown he is prepared to do three things that the West, that's us, still finds unpalatable. He will accept economic pain if he believes it is in Russia's national interest. He is prepared to use force. And he is prepared to lie blatantly and repeatedly. Now, meanwhile, with all the aggressiveness that Moscow has shown, Putin has shown, I have to admire the Baltics and Lithuania in particular for sort of sticking its thumb in the eye, saying that we're not going to be intimidated. Now, of course, the Lithuanian government believes in NATO. And that NATO will defend Lithuania. My brother-in-law, my sister, and others have written me how F-15s buzz Vilnius almost every day, and letting people know that there's air cover and all that. Yet my sister writes that the talk in the cafes and the restaurants is that Lithuania could be overrun in a couple of hours. This seems to be sort of the topic of conversation, that we're sitting here, we're drinking coffee, we're having a good time, but don't you realize that the Russians could overrun us in a couple of hours? So it's on the tip of everybody's tongue, and everybody's thinking about it. Yet, other things are going on to show that Lithuanians are brave, if not defiant, in face of all this. It's been 42 years since Romas Kalanta set himself on fire to protest Soviet occupation of Lithuania. Now, you know, I was a very young guy. I was like in high school when this happened, and I remember that some people even said that Romas Kalanta wasn't quite right in the head, who would burn himself to death. But then I also remember in Vietnam the Buddhist monks who self-immolated themselves, and what kind of press that got over the world, that the Buddhist monks were burning themselves in protest of the war in Vietnam. Anyway, so Romas Kalanta, if you don't know the story, he set himself on fire in Kaunas to protest Soviet occupation. Okay? And this was back in 1972. The anniversary of Romas Kalanta's May 14th, 1972 suicide protest, which sparked riots and a string of similar self-immolations was marked in the garden where he made his famous sacrifice last Wednesday. Participants shared memories of anti-Soviet demonstrations and of the Soviet response to attempts to commemorate Kalanta in the years following his 1972 self-immolation. Jonas Klemanas, present at Wednesday's commemoration, talked about how Soviet security would begin suppressing annual attempts to honor Kalanta as early as April in the years between Kalanta's death and Lithuanian independence in 1991. I remember how every time the Soviet authorities would start to intimidate us before we would start celebrating. As early as late April, you would know that the Kalanta anniversary was approaching as local militia officers would emerge to go everywhere in threes. One would be a sergeant and the other two would be from Central Asia. These were internal army soldiers dressed in militia uniforms, and they would repeat that year after year to intimidate us before our commemorations. Representatives of local municipalities attended this year's commemoration. They spoke and compared Kalanta's sacrifice for freedom to the sacrifices made and the ongoing events in the Ukraine. Now, in the meantime, this is cool, okay? This is very interesting. A suspect in Lithuania's January 13th massacre case was detained in Italy. Okay, according to the Lithuanian Prosecutor General's office, Lithuanian prosecutors received information this week that a suspect has been detained at Milan's airport. Based on initial information on the Russian citizen detained by Italian officers, the detainee could be one of the suspects who, as an army officer, took part in the January 13 events outside the press house and TV tower. Prosecutors are seeking the suspect's immediate extradition to Lithuania. Earlier this year, Yuri Mel, a Russian citizen, was detained at the Panamune border checkpoint on March 12th and is now in custody in Lithuania awaiting trial for alleged crimes committed in connection with the massacres at the TV tower on January 13th, 1991. Warrants for the arrest of 79 suspects in the January 13th case have been issued. The suspects are citizens of Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus. Now, remember, when this event happened, about 1,000 unarmed Lithuanian civilians were injured and 14 were killed during the attempt by the Soviet Army and Special Forces to take over the Vilnius TV tower on January 13th, 1991. Again, this provokes Moscow. At least they say it provokes them, okay? But it's pretty bold of Lithuania. And thank God for that they continue to press these charges against the former Soviet Union. Now, this provocation seems to be going both ways, okay? Listen to this. Lithuanian state border guards at the Kybartai railway checkpoint warned the operating staff aboard an incoming train from Kaliningrad, okay, which is, again, Russian territory, Kaliningrad, on Monday, that the train would not be allowed to continue until posters featuring Soviet symbols were removed. The passengers in the train had put up, like, the hammer and sickle posters in the windows as they were going to transit Lithuanian territories. The posters in the windows of the chartered train had Soviet symbols alongside information in Russian about the train itinerary, train number, and carriage numbers. Lithuanian border guards informed the train's operating staff that Soviet symbols are prohibited in Lithuania. After the posters were removed, the train and over 200 Russian passengers with the necessary documents left Kybartai on time. The bottom line is these passengers, or some of them anyway, were willing to try to intimidate Lithuanians with symbols of the once great Soviet Union plastered in the windows. So there's a lot of this little intimidation going on, and thank God that the Lithuanians are standing up to it. Well, we're getting close to running out of time, so I want to shift gears a little bit. Kalaipa, the LNG vessel, has left South Korea. Why is this significant? Because Lithuania has just got done negotiating with Gazprom, and apparently we've gotten a 20% break in the prices. Anyway, the Independence, a floating storage and regasification unit, FSRU, that's a floating storage and regasification unit, is built for Lithuania's liquefied natural gas terminal, has left Hyundai's heavy industry shipyard in South Korea, and is ultimately headed for Klaipeda. The Independence is the second of four newly built FSRUs Hyundai Heavy Industries sold to a Norwegian company. We are proud to have reached a significant milestone together with Klaipedos Nafta and Hyundai Heavy Industries and expanded our current fleet, said President Sveinung Stolhe in a statement to the Oslo Stock Exchange. Anyway, I'm not going to go through the whole story, but the bottom line is we're going to get this FSRU, this floating storage and regasification unit, that will be adjacent to the liquefied LNG, natural gas terminal. So you see, when the gas comes in liquefied form, it needs to be transferred again to gas. It needs to be pumped out onshore and put in the pipeline. And these giant ships take care of that process. Now, I'm not an engineer, but that's the simple explanation. The ship takes on the liquefied natural gas, converts it to natural gas, and then it's pumped onshore. So the fact that this is going on, and we talked about, you know, the potential fracking going on in the Lithuanian-Polish border, that natural gas prices have dropped about 20% because Lietuvos Dujos, that's Lithuanian gas, and Russian gas supplier Gazprom have come to some agreement. So competition works, ladies and gentlemen, and we should be excited about it because Lithuanians paid more for natural gas, and I keep pounding this every week on this program, at least every time we talk about it, more than anyone else in Europe. Only the Ukrainians are suffering this sort of discrimination in pricing. Russia uses energy, natural gas, as a weapon. There is no quote-unquote market price. They charge what they want depending on your political alliance or lack of it with Moscow. And at least Lithuania is getting a break on that end. And it's, you know, we should be proud that a small country like Lithuania can finally have some leverage against Russia. Anyway, we've run out of time. Thanks for tuning in. This is Kęstutis Reividas for Independent Lithuanian Radio here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial. And don't forget, tell your friends and loved ones they can listen live anywhere in the world, live streaming audio, ktym.com. Iki pasimatymo. Bye-bye.